Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me apologize for the change in accent. But different way of speaking, but the same Lord. And back in England last week when I was ministering in our churches, we were thinking about the conversion of St. Paul. And I thought it'd be a wonderful theme just to open up as we begin to think about the challenges, the excitement, the responsibilities of being Christians in this changing world. What's so exciting about the conversion of Paul? Well, you all know that great narrative in the Acts of the Apostles, where Paul, who's been persecuting the church, is going to Damascus when God encounters him, turns him round, and takes one who was fighting the church to be God's chosen agent for bringing the gospel to the nations. And I find that very exciting for two reasons. One is this. I often wonder, what were those first Christians praying? I suspect they probably prayed for something like this. Lord, get this guy off our backs. He's a real hassle. But God does something even more wonderful. He turns Paul round. He makes the enemy a friend. He, in effect, equips him, commissions him, and sends him out to bring people to Christ. And to me, that brings us to the second point, the grace of God. There's something so wonderful about God that he's able to take people and turn them round, give them this new vision of life, and enable them to go out and speak this word of grace to the world. And I think that is so important. And I know that for myself. When I was younger, back in my teens, I was quite an aggressive atheist. I was someone who was absolutely convinced that people who believed in God were mad or bad or sad or possibly all three, and went up to Oxford convinced that university would confirm my atheism and in effect harden me, giving me this mission to be a kind of atheist evangelist. But it didn't work out like that. Because God spoke to me through Christians, God gave me a new understanding of what things were all about, and as a result, I discovered the Christian faith, and I can honestly say it turned my life inside out. And there will be hundreds in this congregation who can tell a story very similar to that, who can tell in their lives the power of God to transform, to redirect life, to give you a new vision, to excite you, and to move you on in life. But there's someone else I want to talk about, somebody I discovered early in my Christian life as I began to ask questions and began to look for answers. And some of my friends said, look, you need to read C.S. Lewis. And I did. And I have to say, I liked what I read. And I kept on reading, and I'm still reading this guy today. And he's another of these guys like Paul. Lewis was an atheist. Again, an aggressive atheist who believed that science, who believed that suffering had made it impossible to believe in God. And then while he was in Oxford Don, he discovered the grace of God and began to change utterly as he turned from someone who was an atheist to someone who went on to become one of the Christian church's most effective apologists. And I want to pick out a few themes from Lewis that I think may help us today. Here's the first. Why is Christianity so engaging? What is so wonderful about it? Well, we all could give wonderful answers to that question. But here's one of Lewis's answers. Because it gives us a big picture of life. It helps us see how things are interconnected. It's like a lens that brings things into focus. And I'm sure you've all, you know, been on a shoreline sometime. You've seen something in the distance. You've reached for a telescope or a set of binoculars, and you've looked at it, and it's all blurry. And then you focus, and suddenly you see the sail ship and the people on it. Christianity is like a lens that brings things into focus. It allows us to see things for what they really are, and it allows us to see ourselves for what we really are. Yes, with all the problems, but also with the opportunities, the things that God can do in and through each of us. And sometimes God surprises us by equipping us and enabling us to do things we never knew that we could do. Now, that's true of Lewis. I'll talk about that more in a moment. But there's another analogy he uses. In one of his essays, he talks about the Christian faith being like a sun that rises and casts light on the world. I want you to hold that image in your mind. Think of a dark morning, and maybe you're up in the mountains, and behind you the sun is rising. And as it rises, the shadows begin to disappear. The mist begins to get burned away. And you're able to see things that you couldn't see before. For Lewis, that's one of the things that Christianity does. It gives us this way of seeing things clearly, seeing things as they really are. And sure, Lewis is very, very clear. We don't see everything quite as well as we'd like to. There are things like suffering, which still seem to be shrouded in mist. But we see things so clearly, we realize who we are, what we're meant to be doing, and we're given this big picture of what life is all about. And that seems to me to be really important. We need to be reassured that there is a truth that's worth finding. We need to be reassured that behind the changing things going on around us, there is something stable and secure, a rock on which we can build our house of faith. And that's what Lewis found. And sure, there are things that puzzle us, that don't seem to fit in quite as well as we would like. But nevertheless, we're talking about a God who journeys with us as we go through life. I often come back to Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd." And one of the great themes there is that wherever we go in life, in those moments of joy, in those darker moments, in those moments of desolation, God is with us, holding us, reassuring us, even when we pass through the valley of the shadow of death. And we need to hold on to that thought, just as that God holds on to us as we journey through life in His name. So that's one theme from Lewis. Here's another. Lewis was an atheist who discovered Christianity. And he began to realize that that gave him an opportunity to talk to people who were still atheists and begin to explain to them what was so wonderful about the Christian faith. And he realized that God had given him a history that enabled him to speak powerfully to a particular group of people. And Lewis began his famous book, The Problem of Pain, by saying, "Look, I used to be an atheist. Here's why I changed ship." But each of you has a history as well. And one of the questions I'd ask you is this: in what way is your history equipping you for service? What is there in your past? What skills do you have? What experiences do you have that might be put to God's service? For Lewis, he could write, and also he'd been an atheist. He knew he could speak to those who once, in effect, shared his faith that there was no God. And Lewis, I think, reminds us that for each of us, there are gifts that we bring, things maybe that are specific to us, which enable us to do things, to say things, to be things, which maybe nobody else could do. And so in many ways, I'm asking you a question which C.S. Lewis often asked himself: what do I have that I'm able to bring to God's service? Is there something in my past that could be used in the present to serve God and His kingdom? I'm always drawn back to that wonderful story of the calling of those first disciples by the Sea of Galilee. And you know the story so well, you can probably see it in your mind's eye right now. As Christ draws near to these fishermen, they're sitting by the shore, they're mending their nets, and Christ simply says, "Follow me." And those were powerful words. They drew these people to Christ, and they followed him, leaving their nets behind. And then Christ gives them this commission, "You will be fishers of people." Now, do you see the point? They were fishermen. They had certain talents. Now they'd be fishers of people. They'd be taking those talents and using them in the service of the kingdom. What are your talents and how might you use them? Another point Lewis makes is this. We need to explain to people what the rich vocabulary of the Christian faith is all about. And our problem is this. We are so used to wonderful words like salvation, forgiveness, resurrection, that we just assume that everybody else knows what they mean. And yet the real challenge is that we have to explain to people what they mean. I was talking about Paul a moment ago. And if you look at Romans chapter 5, Paul talks a lot about justification by faith. And it's a wonderful theme. It really excites him. But in modern American English, the word justification probably means two things. A justification is, in effect, something like this. I explained to my boss why I arrived late at work for 6 days in a row. You know, the traffic was bad, you know. Or justification is what you do to those right-hand margins on word processors. What I want to say to you is I don't think Paul had either of those in mind when he talked about justification by faith. But the difficulty is our culture doesn't know what that word means for Christians. So I'd like to invite you to think about those rich words that we use all the time. Redemption, salvation, being saved, being born again. How would you explain those to people who don't know the Christian language? Because you could be the person who, in effect, builds a bridge to others that they can cross into the Christian faith by helping them to understand the richness, the vibrancy, the potential to transform of each of these wonderful ideas. We talk about being ransomed by the Lord, and rightly so. Look at Mark 10:45. But we need to explain what ransom means. It's about somebody being in a bad place. They can't get out. They're imprisoned. They're trapped. They're being held captive. And they cannot get out by themselves. And then it speaks of someone who cares for them so much that he pays the ransom price so that they can get out of that place. And in the ancient world, the more important you were, the more important the ransom price. And finally, it's about getting out of that bad place and being set free, walking into freedom. And what we need to do is try and help people to catch a vision of the utter transformation that the Christian faith brings as people realize they are loved by God so much that Christ died for them to make it possible for them to begin this new way of life. But we need to explain those words and help them understand what it's all about. And my challenge to you is, how would you explain those ideas to the people you knew? Lewis says we must translate our theology into the vernacular. In other words, into everyday language. He also says, if you can't do this, you haven't understood it yourself. So there's a challenge for us, I think. But here's the final point I want to make from Lewis. Lewis realized the importance of stories. You all have read the Narnia Chronicles, and you know that in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the children go into Narnia, and they discover this strange and wonderful world, and they're asking questions like, well, what is this place? Where does it come from? What's its history? And they hear different stories. One story goes like this. This is the realm of the White Witch. She really owns this place. She's rightly in charge. But they also hear another story, which goes like this. This is really Aslan's realm. He's not here at the moment, and someone has usurped him. But one day he will come back, and everything will change. And the children realize that both these stories can't be right. They have to choose. And I think that's important because it reminds us that we live in a culture that tells stories about who we are and why we matter. One story that dominates our culture goes like this. We are simply the random products of a meaningless process. We are here by accident, and we are of no significance to anyone. But there's another story, a story that we need to make sure is heard, which is that each of us is the beloved creation of a loving God who loved us so much that Christ died for us so that we might live. And we need to get that story out there. We need to make sure that story is heard, that people realize that this is transformative. And each of us has the privilege of being able to explain to our family, to our friends, to our neighbors, what it is about the Christian faith that we find so wonderful. Here's what I find so wonderful about the Christian faith. Here's how it changed my life. Maybe it could change yours as well. But Lewis has another point to make about stories. He tells us how each of the children begin to realize that there's this story of Narnia and that their own individual stories, in effect, become caught up in that bigger story. And the point that Lewis is making is that nobody loses their individual identity. They all keep their original stories, but it's taken, it's used in a new way, as in effect they become part of this bigger story, enter into this bigger picture, and help do things to move it on. And I think Lewis is inviting us to think about this question. What is there that we can do to advance the kingdom of God? How can I take my own story, my own life, and in effect use it to move on the bigger story of God's dealings with the world? What can I do to make a difference? And here's where we come back to Paul, because many of us would feel perhaps something like this. I'm not very good at doing things. I'm not very important. I'm not very talented, so I'm not really sure there's very much I can do to make a difference at all. And Paul, I think, says some things that are very helpful to anybody who feels that way. Here's the point he would make. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, he talks about each of us being an earthen vessel which holds a great treasure. And the problem is, we tend to focus on the earthen vessel bit and forget about the treasure bit. We look at the outward appearance, not at this treasure which each of us bears and each of us can share. I think the real issue for me here is trying to realize the importance of that word grace. I began the sermon by saying Paul's conversion reminds us and reassures us of the grace of God. And you and I can be reassured of that, because the point here is we are not on our own. It's not as if we are struggling unaided to talk about our faith or to try and change things. We are trying to do this in the presence and in the power of the living God who raised Christ Jesus from the dead. And that, I think, changes everything. You know, in 2 Corinthians, Paul talks about this thorn in the flesh. What's he getting at? He's saying, in effect, he felt this great sense of weakness. And I felt that, and I'm sure all of you have felt something very much like it. This is too hard. I can't do this. I need help. But as you read that wonderful passage in 2 Corinthians 12, Paul hears God speak these words to him. And I think he speaks these words to me and to everyone here this morning. My grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in weakness. And you know, it's not so much what we bring to the table that really matters in the end. It's what we let God do in and through us. And as we think about the conversion of Paul, let's take this thought away. We are dealing with a God who is able to take and use all of us, even though we may feel we are weak and small and foolish, because we are dealing with a God who is great and wise and strong and is able to take each of us and do things that perhaps we could never imagine. And my challenge to you is not really a challenge. It's much more of an encouragement. It's simply say, let's trust this God. Let's ask, what do you want us to do? And journey with us as our shepherd as we try to do these things for you. For me, one of the great joys of being a Christian is simply this. I do my best, but I let God do the rest. And for me, that's encouraging. And I want you to be encouraged, you to be reassured that the grace of God is sufficient for you. You may feel you're weak, but God knows you as you are. He loves you and He wants to use you. And in many ways, it's about reaching out for that hand of grace to pull you out of your seat and to take you and do those great things that God is waiting to do in you and through you. Thank you so much for listening. I pray God will bless you all richly in all you're doing. Thank you so much for having me.
We hope that you've enjoyed the message today and that it will be a source of encouragement to you this week. At Champion Forest Baptist Church, we desire to help people make sense out of life through Christ-centered living. And that's because with Christ, we have hope and true satisfaction. The Bible clearly states that all men have offended God by worshiping things He created instead of Him. We have chosen to reject His authority in our life and look for satisfaction in things He created instead of Him, which is ultimately pointless given that He is truly the only thing that can satisfy us completely. He is the perfection of everything we seek. The problem is, though, that once we have sinned against Him by turning to these other things, a gap is created between us, not allowing us to access Him anymore to find this satisfaction. God's character demands that our rebellion be accounted for before He forgives us. And this is the beauty of the message of Jesus. Christ is perfect in every way. He never rebelled against God, and He took upon our punishment on Himself so that we could be reconciled to God and be fully satisfied in Him, gaining eternal life. We need Jesus because without Him, we are without hope, both in this life and for eternity. Turn to Christ alone for forgiveness and find satisfaction fully in our great God. Once again, thanks for joining us today, and we hope to see you soon.